Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nantakoti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Shri Gaur Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogopinashai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai, Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai, Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai, Navadeep Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutalai. Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nichi Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pratarani Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paskachade Satarne Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutalpada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakapa Chubhischa Kripa Sundari Vatapatitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnevi Namo Maha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. September 25th, 2017, Sky Class from Hilo, Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, Text 7. Tad asya samsmritir bandha. Paratantram yachat kritam. Bhavatyankartur ishasya. Shakshino nirvitatmana. Tat.
Tat.
From the misconception.
Asya.
Of the conditioned soul.
Of the conditioned soul.
Samsthiti.
Samsthiti.
Conditioned life.
Conditioned life.
Bandha.
Bondage.
Paratantriyam.
Paratantriyam.
Dependence.
Dependence.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Tatkritam.
Tatkritam.
Made by that.
Made by that.
Bhavati.
Bhavati.
Is.
Is.
Akartuhu.
Akartuhu.
Of the non-doer.
Of the
Ishasya.
Ishasya.
Independent.
Independent.
Shakshinaha.
Shakshinaha.
The witness.
Witness.
Nirvritta Atmanaha.
Nirvritta Atmanaha.
Joyful by nature.
Joyful.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. Material consciousness is the cause of one's conditional life, in which conditions are enforced upon the living entity by the material energy. Although the spirit soul does not do anything and is transcendental to such activities, he is thus affected by material life. Prabhupada's purport. The Mayavadi philosopher, who does not differentiate between the supreme spirit and the individual spirit, says that the conditional existence of a living entity is his lila, or pastime. But the word, quote, pastime, unquote, implies employment in the activities of the Lord. The Mayavadis misuse the word and say that even if the living entity has become a stool-eating hog, he is also enjoying his pastimes. This is the most dangerous interpretation. Actually, the Supreme Lord is the leader and maintainer of all living entities. His pastimes are transcendental to any material activity. Such pastimes of the Lord cannot be dragged to the level of the conditional activities of the living entities. In conditional life, the living entity actually remains as if a captive in the hands of material energy. Whatever the material energy dictates, the conditioned soul does. He has no responsibility, he is simply the witness of the action. But he is forced to act in that way due to his offense in his eternal relationship with Krishna. Lord Krishna therefore says in the Bhagavad Gita that Maya, the material energy, is so forceful that it is insurmountable. But if a living entity simply understands that his constitutional position is to serve Krishna, and he tries to act on this principle, then however conditioned he may be, the influence of Maya immediately vanishes. This is clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter. Krishna takes charge of anyone who surrenders to him in helplessness, and thus the influence of Maya or conditioned life is removed. The spirit soul is actually Satchidananda, Brahma Samhita 5.1, eternal, full of bliss, and full of knowledge. Under the clutches of Maya, however, he suffers from continued birth, death, disease, and old age. One has to be serious to cure this condition of material existence and transfer himself to Krishna consciousness, for thus his long suffering may be mitigated without difficulty. In summary, the suffering of the conditioned soul is due to his attachment to material nature. This attachment should thus be transferred from matter to Krishna. Tad asya samsmritir bandha paratanchyam yachat kritam bhavatyakartur ishasya shakshino nirvritatmana. Material consciousness is the cause of one's conditional life, in which conditions are enforced upon the living entity by the material energy. Although the spirit soul does not do anything and is transcendental to such activities, he is thus affected by conditional life. Now, this verse is very profound. One could say that this is a verse which is communicating an essential part of Siddhanta. And interestingly enough, the Siddhanta, or the conclusion of all knowledge expressed in this verse, is one that's accepted by not only Gaudiya Vaishnavas, not only Vaishnavas, but even a lot of the impersonalists and the Buddhists. Of course, the impersonalists and the Buddhists have a little twist on this, so we'll get to that in a little later. So here Srila Prabhupada is talking about the fact that we are suffering. And in Prabhupada's lecture that he gives, I believe it is in Bombay, on this verse, he talks about samsmritihi as suffering, having to take birth again and again and again, going through birth. Birth is suffering. You're packed up, in, as Prabhupada would say, packed up. Sometimes we joke to people, you know, I'm going to pack you in my suitcase. So you're really packed up in the womb. And the process of birth, and as we read in a previous purport, having to adjust to a different planet, you know, all of a sudden you're here. You are. You don't understand the language. You don't know who you are. You don't know the atmosphere of the planet, and so many things. You know, recently, a couple members of my family have moved to a new location. You know, you move someplace, you have to pack everything, and move everything, get adjusted to a new place. Where do I shop? How do I get to the temple? You know, so many things. So imagine just being born, all the adjustment. And then all of us have the suffering of disease, the suffering of, many of us are experiencing the suffering of old age, where things we took for granted in the body as just being there and working are no longer so. And then death, where we, everything that we've accumulated, everything that we've invested in, everything that we've considered our own, we give up and we start completely anew. I mean, at least when you move from a new place to another, you get to pack something, you know. The only thing you pack from death to rebirth is your karma. And then there's adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhotic, and then adiatmic, not only bodily disease and mental anxieties, our minds are in so much anxiety pretty much all the time about something, always worrying about how we're going to do this and that, relationships, anxieties. And adibhuta, from other living entities, so we all suffer from our friends and family are causes of suffering. What to speak of our enemies, the government, the mosquitoes, fire ants, whatever it may be. And then adidaiva, hurricanes, earthquakes, fire, or just it's too hot, it's too cold, or something like that. So how are we going to get, what is the cause of the suffering and what's the cause of freedom. So here, a very interesting cause is given. A cause that we might not consider. And again, this particular understanding of Siddhanta is something that, this particular part of Siddhanta, is something that's understood by the vast majority of the world's religions and spiritual processes. Where Srila Prabhupada says that our problem is our offense in our eternal relationship with Krishna. So this can be described in different ways. There's many religions that describe this as some sort of original sin, or as ignorance. Sometimes it's described as ignorance. But whatever the nomenclature, whatever the terminology applied to this concept, there's some root cause of offense. There's a root cause, a root desire on the part of any soul that is suffering, or as we'll get to in a moment, apparently suffering. And that is a willful, deliberate choosing to turn away from the Lord. This one point is very difficult to accept emotionally in terms of our false ego. I would say this is the most difficult point to accept. And it is on this point that the atheists have a field day where they say, you know, well, there can't be God, or God can't be benevolent, because, you know, how could he have a world where there's so much suffering, and I don't remember committing any offense, as if it was something in the distant past only. When Prabhupada speaks on this verse, he talks a lot about the word anadi, that we are conditioned. He says, adi is the creation, anadi is before the creation. He said, and we may have even existed in the material world in other creations. This may not be our first creation cycle that we're experiencing. So you could say that our offense, our turning away, our original sin, happened anadi. It happened, as Prabhupada often translates, time immemorial, time beyond memory. And that's of course true, but it is an ongoing offense. It's not just something that happened in the past. It's not like we committed some crime, you know, somebody in jail, they committed a crime 20 years ago, and since going into jail, they haven't committed any crimes. They're just still suffering for something from 20 years ago. It's not like that. That kind of suffering may apply to karmic things within the karmic sphere, but in this case, it doesn't apply at all. Because as we see, Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport that the influence of Maya immediately vanishes. However conditioned he may be, the influence of Maya immediately vanishes. So if the influence of Maya can vanish immediately, then this must mean that our offense, our sin, our turning away is something happening in the present tense. Because as soon as we stop it, it immediately goes away. It is therefore not exactly a punishment. Prabhupada, again, in his lecture on this verse, uses the word punishment, as some Smriti is punishment. At least the way the behaviorists define punishment, it isn't. Punishment is something, as I gave the example with a prison, where you do something wrong, and after you've done something wrong, the wrong act is completed. Then you get a punishment, and there's nothing you can do except serve out your punishment. You know, you've robbed somebody. You rob somebody at 10 a.m. Let's say you have a really amazing, efficient police force, like they show in the movies, that finds you at 10:30 a.m., which, of course, doesn't happen very often. And, you know, then you're in jail that day, and you have, you know, have your court case the next day, and you're in prison, and so forth. And then once you're in prison, you're in prison. You have a certain sentence. The judge has given you a sentence of 5 years, and you're no longer stealing. And as I said, you stop stealing. Even if you give up the desire to steal, you may still have to serve out your sentence. You may not be immediately released. So that, in terms of the behaviorist, is punishment. What's being discussed here is more, again, in behaviorist psychological terminology, what we call a negative incentive. So something in this regard means that your suffering is happening only as long as you are doing the bad thing. And as soon as you stop doing the bad thing, the suffering immediately stops. we can think of this physically, if sometimes like we're sitting wrongly and so we're feeling some, you know, pinching. And as soon as we, the moment we adjust the way we're sitting, immediately there is some relief. There's immediate relief. So it's much more like that. It's something that we're doing in the present tense, and the moment we stop doing that, then there is immediate relief. Now, of course, we often have the term gradual, that we often have descriptions in the Shastra and by the Acharyas, that this letting go of our offense and this having relief is something that happens gradually and proportionally. That is simply a description of what most people do. It's not a description of what must be. It's a description of what is rather than what must be. Because we also have the description that if one were to completely give up one's offense, totally, completely, immediately, the corresponding relief would also be total and immediate. Most of us are not willing to give up our offensive mentality totally and immediately, but we give it up very gradually. And what is this offense? This offense is that we want to be the Ishvara. Here we have the Ishashya. The irony, of course, is that we are, in our constitutional position, actually a kind of Ishvara. Mamai Vamso Jivaloke, we're a parting parcel of the Lord, and therefore we have the qualities of the Lord. Prabhupada explains that in our original position, we have immense power and immense freedom. In fact, Srila Prabhupada, again in speaking in his lecture on this verse, he gives a lot of emphasis to the word samstruti and also to paratantriyam. So he says paratantriyam means that we are controlled by another. He said our original position is to be satantriyam, where we are self-controlled. That doesn't mean, that's not like material self-control where, you know, you want to punch somebody and you by willpower and by intelligence, you suppress or repress or redirect your instincts so that you don't punch them, although the desire to punch them remains. That's not what we mean by self-control. We mean that one is one's own agent. One has autonomy. So our offense is that we want autonomy separate from the Lord instead of wanting autonomy as part of the Lord. And this is by analogy. This is, we have freedom if we're obedient citizens. And if you want to have freedom by being an outlaw, then you're going to come under the control of the criminal system. So I was talking with my grandsons the other day about how, you know, when we're a free citizen, we don't feel that we're being controlled by the government, generally speaking. You know, you don't feel like that. In fact, you feel that the government is facilitating you. You feel the government by having painted lines in the road and having traffic signals and so forth and giving driver's licenses are actually facilitating you to be free to go where you want rather than restricting you. But as soon as you become a criminal, then you become restricted. So our offense is that we wanted absolute freedom without any oversight of the Lord, however, whatsoever, without even being part of the Lord. And that, of course, is not possible. So the result of that offense, and why is it an offense? It's an offense because the Lord is maintaining us. He's giving us everything. Matasvajir Ganam Apohanam Tra, he's giving us our intelligence. He's everything. In fact, you could say he is everything. So if someone is your benefactor, and if you're actually dependent on that person, and then you want to deny them and you want to be independent in a way that you cannot be, then that's very offensive. You know, if the child says to their parent, I'm going to live in your house and I'm going to eat your food and, you know, use the electricity, but I'm not going to listen to what you say, I'm just going to do whatever you want. Well, that would be very offensive. So that is the offense. And the result of this offense is that we become illusioned. And this illusion is very interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, this world is very strange. So Krishna is quite kind. So in this world, if you're maintaining someone and you're providing everything for them, and they rebel against you while still being under your maintenance, we don't have a choice about that. We can't maintain ourselves. Our tendency may be to try to force them. You know, and of course the words here are forced. But Prabhupada says, as if a captive. We'll get to that in a moment. So this being illusioned means that Krishna is very kind. Suridam sarvabhutanam. He's very kind. And he says, all right, if you want to try to be the supreme controller, separate from me, then I'll create an illusion where it will seem like you are. I'll appear to be absent. You won't see me behind everything. Sutre mani gana eva. I'll be like the thread under the pearls, where you just see the pearls. You don't see the thread. And you can imagine that you are doing all these things separate from me. I'll create a virtual reality for you. Because in the real reality, the real reality, you know, it's not possible. It's just an impossibility. You could say, well, why can't he do it? Why can't God create something that's the same as reality, that in which we can each be an independent Lord? And of course, he could, but that's not the nature of his manifestation. He could theoretically create anything. Of course, this world is real. It's not that it's not real, but it's not the reality. Just like a dream is real, a computer game is real. It's not that it's unreal, but it is not the reality. You know, if someone, they're watching a movie, you know, it's real. The movie is real. Just like the other night we watched for the second time the movie about Srila Prabhupada. So it's real in the sense that something is happening, but what appears to be happening and what's actually happening is not the same. You know, it appears that somebody is, that Thomas Hopkins is speaking in front of you, but he's not. He's not there. He's probably in Pennsylvania. So he's not actually on the screen talking. What's actually happening is lights are being put on the screen. So it's a virtual reality in that sense. And in this virtual reality, and here is one of another key point that is understood at least by all the Eastern religions and philosophies, we are not the doer. Akartahu. We are not the doer. We are not doing anything. We are really like a person watching a movie or reading a book, or probably a better analogy that Sadaputta liked is somebody playing a computer game where, you know, you're not really doing anything. You're sitting in your chair in your room and you have some character, which they interestingly enough sometimes call an avatar. You know, you have a character in the game, and that character is doing things. That character is shopping, that character is fighting monsters, that character is doing all kinds of things. But you're not actually doing any of those things. One is simply the witness, as we have here in the verse, sakshinaha. One is just the witness. So why is it that we're experiencing suffering? Well, just like a person playing a game. A person playing a game, I mean, even, you know, for those of us who haven't played computer games, if you think of a board game like Monopoly, I mean, I've seen people get really upset about Monopoly games. You know, are you really buying and selling property? No, you're not. Are you really moving around the board? No, you're taking a piece that you consider to be you. By extension, you become this little piece of plastic or whatever on the game board. And the people become attached. They become upset. And of course, in gambling, they actually stake money on the game. So we're kind of like that. We've staked our identity and our happiness on this game of life, of material life. We've put up a high stake. We've actually staked everything. We're like this really pathetic gambler. You know, kind of what Maharaj Yudhisthira did, where he staked his brothers and his wife and his kingdom and his fortune. So we've kind of done that. We've kind of said, okay, everything, my identity, my very sense of existence, all of my varieties of happiness, physical, mental, intellectual, emotional. I'm going to gamble on how I move this piece on the board game. And because of this attachment and because of this investment, therefore, you know, when the game doesn't go right, then we feel suffering. We experience suffering. Now, you see this with people watching sports. You know, they've invested themselves, their identity, their sense of victory and defeat in the activities of the players of the game. What do they have to do with the players? What's really funny is in sports, professional sports, I believe this is the only vocation where this is a fact, the players can be traded and sold without their consent. It's actually a kind of slavery. So, you know, if you're watching the Chicago team, for example, none of those players may be from Chicago, and none of them may have any investment in Chicago whatsoever, at all. Now, with college sports, it's not like that. They're actually students at the college. But with professional sports, it's like that. So here you are, you're living in Chicago, or you were born in Chicago or something, you identify with Chicago, and you're rooting for the Chicago team. But the team has nothing to do with Chicago. There's no relationship. It's all illusory. And one's happiness and distress is falling and rising with this. So this is our problem. As Srila Prabhupada says at the end of this purport, right? In summary, the suffering of the conditioned soul is due to his attachment to material nature. It's simply an attachment. And the ultimate attachment is, I am going to be the enjoyer and the doer separate from God. So again, this principle that the cause is attachment is understood, I would venture to say, by all or virtually all of the world's religions and spiritualities, that we are suffering due to attachment to matter. Like it says in the Bible, the love of money is the root of all evil. So that having our investment in this world rather than our investment in God. This is, again, something that every religion understands. They may not understand it quite the way we're explaining it here. As I said, I think it's only the Eastern faith and spirituality that understand that this world is virtual reality and we're simply a witness. And so Prabhupada makes this astonishing statement in the purport. He says he has no responsibility. He is simply the witness of the action. So somebody could read that and say, you know, just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you're not really killing or causing anyone to kill. And I'm pretty sure it was the murderer Charles Manson who used that verse in the Bhagavad Gita to say, all right, you know, we can murder people and we're not responsible. So the fact that we're not responsible doesn't mean that you're not responsible in terms of the game. So again, if you think of it in terms of a game, if you're playing Monopoly and you do something wrong, you have a wrong move, you have a consequence within the game. There's no consequence out of the game. You know, your bank balance, your property that you own doesn't change in what we call the real world. It only changes in the game. And, you know, if you're playing a computer game, again, what you gain and lose only happens within the game. If you're attached to a movie or a book, you know, the gains and losses, successes and failures, this is only happening within the book or the movie. It's not happening to you. And in that sense, you can say you don't have any responsibility. You're not really doing anything. And we know this because Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Prachajama Mekam Saranam Rajaham Tam Sarva Pape Bhyo Mokshishyami Masuchaha. If a person walks away from the game and says, I'm not playing this game anymore, and goes back to real life, there's no debt. There's no actual debt. So as long as you're playing Monopoly, you have debt. As long as you're playing the computer game, you have debt. There's things you have to pay for. You get some reaction, good and bad. But if you say, I'm not playing anymore, you walk away. The good things and the bad things that would accrue to you in that game don't accrue to you in your real life. They just vanish immediately. So in that way, the living entity is not actually responsible. And therefore Prabhupada says, however conditioned he may be, like Krishna says, even if you're the greatest sinner of all sinners. You know, we have examples of Magrari. I'm in the middle of reading the story of Magrari, the hunter who was half-killing animals, enjoying torturing them, which is the height of evil, to get pleasure by being the instrument of someone's pain. That's the ultimate expression of evil. You know, Jagai and Madai, that no matter how sinful one, no matter how conditioned one is, immediately there's not actually any responsibility. But within the context of the game, there is responsibility. So as long as one is conditioned, as long as one is acting within the scope of karma, there will certainly be karmic reactions. And the acharyas explain that if that wasn't the case, there'd be no meaning to karma or scriptural injunctions. Ah, now here's the interesting thing. He says he is forced to act in that way. As if a captive, he is forced. So this is another twist on the whole thing. That once we decide to become illusion, once we're illusion, we become as if captive. It is as if we're forced. What does that mean exactly? So we're talking about not being responsible because we're actually the witness. We're not the doer. But here it's also saying we're not responsible because we become captive. So this can be analogous to people who commit crimes under the influence of some intoxicant. Sometimes there are certain, I don't remember what they are, but there are certain intoxicants where people are particularly prone to become violent and not even remember after they come out of the intoxicant what they did. You know, I know alcohol can have that effect, especially people who are hardcore alcoholics. They can have blackout periods where, sometimes like 12 hours, where they don't remember what they did. You know, who knows, maybe another entity is taking over their body, I have no idea. But the fact is that there are intoxicants under the influence of which a person will do things that they would not normally do. And Maya is like that. Karanangguna Sangasya, you know, when we're under the control of the modes of nature, we do things that we as a soul would not do. And Arjuna asks this question. He says, why do I feel forced to do things against my own ideals, against my own principles? Why do I feel forced to do things which are bad for me? And this quandary is just, it torments all of us conditioned souls. We're just absolutely tormented by it. That we continually make resolutions of how we want to be. And we believe it. We actually believe it. We believe, I want to be like this. I want to do this. I want to act like this. I want to speak like this. We actually believe it. But we can't do it. We have a large disconnect between our desires and our ideals and our behavior. And we feel forced. So in a sense, we are. But we're being forced by something that we've voluntarily taken. When somebody it takes some intoxicant, which then forces them to act in a particular way, you know, like they pull out the driver to see if they're intoxicated, they ask them to walk a straight line. So the person intends to walk a straight line, they want to walk a straight line, they desire it quite strongly so they won't get arrested, but they can't. The intoxicant is forcing them, as if they're a captive, to be unsteady on their feet. But the person chose to take the intoxicant. So therefore Prabhupada says, as if a captive. As if a captive. So we can understand we're forced in several ways, that when we're in Maya, we're forced to follow the rules of Maya. And even the great yogis, one of the siddhis of the yogis, is to do things outside the laws of nature. So what to speak of the soul? The soul's not subjected to the laws of nature. But when one plays the game of nature, one becomes subjected to the laws of nature. You voluntarily go to a country, you put yourself under the laws of that country. And the way material nature works is whatever particular combination of the modes we feel attracted to, then that combination of the modes controls us. It creates a certain body for us. it creates certain stories and so forth. We're controlled by our karmic destiny, which again creates a certain body and puts us in a certain family and certain country and weaves a story for us. So we're the architect, and yet we're as if captive. Both are true. Depends on how you want to look at it. It's our decision to take the intoxicant. It's our decision to commit the crime. It's our decision to come under the nose of material nature. And that decision makes us as if a captive that's being forced. You know, we decide to get on the Ferris wheel. We pay our money to get on the Ferris wheel. And then the attendant locks us into the seat. And again, with spirituality, however, that is a decision we are making moment by moment. And therefore, it is a decision that can be jettisoned moment by moment. So how do we get freedom? So here we come into different theories. The Mayavadis say, well, we're not, the way we get freedom is to realize that we're not really suffering or really God, and to start seeing all of our activities here as if they were divine lila. Now it's interesting, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that we can see the world as the divine lila, and we can see our activities in the world as participation in the divine lila of the Lord. But that's different than what the Mayavadis are saying. They're saying that we're in this world and we're in illusion and we're doing these activities voluntarily as play. And that's not a fact. I wouldn't voluntarily play to break my leg. I mean, I wouldn't voluntarily play to get strep throat. This is ridiculous. And how does any sane person come to the conclusion that all these miseries are voluntary play? When the Lord takes the form of Varaha, it's a beautiful form. Prabhupada talks here about the stool-eating hog in this purport. So when Krishna takes the form of Varaha, he's not eating stool. He's consorting with his wife in the form of the earth, and his hairs are the Vedic hymns. I mean, it's just, he's actually enjoying, you know, but if I get the form of a hog, I'm not enjoying. And then, of course, the Buddhists just say, well, none of this is real at all. They don't see it as a virtual reality or a film or a computer game. They just say it's not real at all. And interestingly, the Buddhists say that you focus on being the witness, and then you go beyond that to say there is no witness. There is nothing. We don't exist at all. There's no higher reality. And we have to say, the Nirvisheshas and Nirvadi folks, they're really using philosophy to justify the original offense. There's no God because I'm God, or there's no God because there's no God. And it's they're really, they haven't gotten rid of the original offense. Therefore, Vimuktimanina, they're Avasuddha Buddhya, Muktimanina, they're not, their so-called liberation is just within the mind. They really haven't purified themselves of the original cause. So the original cause, it's so nice what Prabhupada says here. What do we actually do about it? And this is one of those things where it's extremely simple to describe. It's very simple to understand. It's very simple to describe. But the execution of it is not so simple. So Srila Prabhupada says, again, end of this purport, in summary, the suffering of the conditioned soul is due to his attachment to material nature. This attachment should just be thus be transferred from matter to Krishna. So that's the key. Go back to the original cause, our original offense, and become again attached to Krishna. And then if we look at that and say, oh, how do I do that? And then we go back to in the first paragraph, where Prabhupada says, but if a living entity simply understands that his constitutional position is to serve Krishna, so simply understands. Understanding, of course, can happen at many different levels. But let's take this understanding as being primarily theoretical and intellectual, not realized understanding. Let's take it at that really beginning point. He says, and he tries to act on this principle. So here Prabhupada is not even saying that a person actually acts on that principle, but he's making an effort. So a person is understanding theoretically, oh, my constitutional position is to serve Krishna. That is who I really am. Let me make an effort to do that. Prabhupada then says, however conditioned he may be, the influence of Maya immediately vanishes. Well, what does that mean? That means that as soon as one even theoretically understands and makes some attempt, which is what Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is, it's making an attempt, it's trying to act on that principle with a limited amount of realization, Maya immediately vanishes in the sense that one's life is now directed personally by Krishna, not just by one's karma and by Durga Devi. Now, of course, Maya only completely and immediately vanishes in an experiential way when we're not just understanding theoretically and trying to act on that principle, but when we have realization. And the realization is on the level, again, of attachment. Attachment is an emotion. It is a desire. We're not talking about, you know, the Mayavadis or the Buddhist idea that this realization is simply knowledge. That is simply, oh, now I understand. It's not just like an epiphany where one has factual understanding, but it is a sense of attachment. It is a matter of the heart, because our entanglement is a matter of attachment. Why? You know, as I was listening to Prabhupada's lecture on this verse, I kept thinking, you know, why would anybody choose to be under the control of Maya instead of under the control of Krishna? It's completely, totally idiotic. But it's due to attachment. Attachment is not, in case any of you have noticed, particularly logical. You know, guy falls in love with a girl. If she can't cook, oh, I don't care. We'll eat out. She doesn't know how to clean. Oh, that's all right. I'll make enough money to hire a cleaner. Oh, the guy hasn't finished school. He's just bagging groceries at, you know, the food store. Oh, that's all right. We'll live in a tent. You know, attachment is not, it's not logical. I love my country. I will sign up for the military and lose my legs out of love for my country. I mean, come on. Is that logical? So attachment makes us do things that are illogical all the time. Huh? So let us transfer our attachment to Krishna. Actually, everything we're attached to is Krishna. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagadavyaktamutya matstani sarvabhutani nachahamte swastita. Actually, everything we're attached to is already Krishna. Even we're part of Krishna. So to become attached actually to Krishna properly. And that should be the purpose of everything that we're doing. Our bhakti yoga process, this is something I say frequently, our bhakti yoga process is that of becoming attached to Krishna. Maya shakta manaparta, ashakta. We're not chanting japa, worshipping the deity, offering our food as a religious ritual. In fact, that's one of the offenses on chanting, to see the chanting as if it were some karmakanda ritual. It's one of the impediments to bhakti, niyamagraha. One impediment is not doing the practices of bhakti, and another impediment is doing them, but doing them as if they were a mechanical ritual. Doing them the way that we do things in the world. You know, in the world we think, okay, I'm going to figure out how this game works. You know, I'm going to figure it out, like professional gamblers. I'm going to beat the system. I'm going to understand how it works. And I'm going to come out on top. Whether one tries to do that, you know, through science, I'm going to understand the laws of nature. or when it tries to do it through business, I'm going to make a lot of money, or through government, you know, I'm going to control the people, or through, you know, just becoming expert in your craft or your farming, or, you know, I'm going to use the right essential oils and the right herbs, and however one tries to, I'm going to figure out material nature. And when I figure out material nature, I'm going to use it in such a way that it will become my slave. So we shouldn't approach Krishna like that. You know, I'm going to figure out Krishna, and then he'll be my slave, and I'll be able to, you know, I'll go to the source. I won't just try to figure out the machine, I'll try to figure out the owner of the machine. So no, this is not, it's not the answer. The answer is establishing our relationship. Prabhupada says, due to his offense and his eternal relationship with Krishna. I have an eternal relationship with Krishna. I have a personal and eternal relationship with Krishna. So this is what we should be looking for in what we're doing. When I'm chanting japa, what is my attachment? When I'm singing the Guru Vastika, you know, to really meditate. Oh, how is my guru engaged in deity worship? How is my guru distributing prasadam? How is my guru feeling ecstasy in the kirtan? How is my guru describing the transcendental lila of the divine couple? We should be developing some attachment to guru. How is Krishna dancing on Kalga? How is Krishna, you know, stealing the gopis' garments? How is becoming attached to Krishna or some form of Krishna? And if our attachment shifts from illusion to reality, then, you know, it's just like you're playing a game and this is a stupid game. Why am I playing this game? What a stupid waste of time. And you walk away. You're playing some game and you're winning and losing, and somebody says, hey, you want some pizza? And, you know, param drishta nivartate. Oh, I have a higher taste. Or you're eating some pizza and your spouse comes along. Put down the pizza, come enjoy with me. A higher taste. So we transfer our attachment. And the sooner and the more completely we can do that, the sooner and more completely we are free from Maya. So I have about 7 minutes for our morning program here. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements.
Okay, Guru. Whatever time we have, please. Any questions or comments?
The Manson verse?
Huh?
The verse that Manson used for his defense, that he's only a witness.
It was the, you cannot kill or cause anyone to kill. You're not the killer. Give me a couple minutes.
Okay, it's in two.
Yeah, it's in the Bhagavad Gita. Let's see.
Anyone. That's enough.
Yeah, it's 2:21. Oh, Parta, how can a person who knows that the soul is indestructible, eternal, unborn, and immutable kill anyone or cause anyone to kill?
Okay.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the class. I just have a really quick question. In the Monopoly game analogy, and we're identifying with the peeve, then am I then metaphorically Jiva? Or Supersoul?
Jiva.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Great class. I was taking notes the whole time. I usually don't do that.
Hi, Krishna.
So many brilliant points. Thank you.
Well, you know, I was going to say that I was just waiting to the end to ask the question about, you know, how when you're in the midst of suffering, you know, it's just like theoretical, but you answered it so perfectly that it's because we don't have the attachment to Krishna, then automatically it goes away. And it's just, it was really, really good. Like, you made it so clear, like I've never heard anyone else.
I mean, I had a practical experience in China. I got very sick from the air pollution, and I was getting basically sicker and sicker and sicker every day. At one point I went to the hospital and they said, oh yeah, this is from the air pollution and very common. Anyway, I became so sick that I actually like collapsed. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't even sit up. And it got to the point that I couldn't even practically speak. I was in terrible pain. And I asked the devotee I was staying with, finally, I just said, you know, read. So she just started reading to me from Krishna book. And as we really meditated on the pastimes, then I stopped feeling the pains in the body and I stopped feeling the difficulties of the body. And I was actually gradually able to function, at least to some extent, even though the body was still incapacitated. So it's a practical thing that you become attached to Krishna, you become detached from the suffering. And ultimately, if we become fully attached to Krishna, we don't even experience the suffering as suffering at all. Anybody else?
Kind of.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it's almost a little bit discouraging because when you're in the midst of intense suffering, you just fully feel it, and any philosophy is just theoretical. So we can understand that our attachment just really is superficial as well.
Yeah, that's a fact. In fact, we could say that intense suffering it's kind of an indicator to us. Or intense pleasures. I mean, you know, we have a godbrother who, he saw Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and he kept saying to Prabhupada, I've memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita, would you like me to recite it? And Prabhupada was basically ignoring him. And at a certain point, and one of the managers came into the room, and Prabhupada turned to the manager and said, can you give this boy something practical to do? His parents were, at that time, the owners of Playboy magazine, or the managers or the editors or something anyway. They were very rich. And they both died in a plane crash, at which point he inherited millions of dollars. As soon as he inherited millions of dollars, he gave up Krishna consciousness pretty much immediately. So the tests are when we get either some great suffering, which can be, of course, physical, mental, emotional, any kind of suffering, or we get some great happiness, where is our attachment? Do we absorb ourselves in those feelings of suffering or pleasure, or are we still attached to Krishna? And you could say these are tests, but they're tests, it's not exactly a test like in a school where the teacher really doesn't know what you know. And the teacher is giving a test so the teacher can know what you know. But these tests are so we can know what we know. You know, we can go on in life thinking, oh yeah, I'm really attached to Krishna. I'm attached to Krishna in this way. I'm attached to my Guru Maharaj in this way. And, you know, I'm really a good devotee and I've got it all together. And these situations are Krishna saying, hey, actually this is where you're really at. So these situations are ways of us understanding our actual situation so that we can then know what we need to work on and how we need to work on it. Can take one more?
Nobody else?
Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.